Good morning, Wisconsin. Morning, world. It's a new day. Thank you for kicking it off with us right here at WFHR. Serious comedy to start your day. Melissa, Seth, and James here with you at 9:04 on the clock on this December 8th. Happy Friday Eve, everybody. Hope Thursday is treating you good.
Yeah.
We've got some good stuff to get into this hour. I did want to let everybody know. So let me see here. When's the next time the three of us? Next Thursday. So yep. Next Thursday, the three of us are getting together. Little homework for everybody.
Ooh, okay.
I want your top five holidays.
All right.
Your top five holidays. Okay.
Find the most obscure. No,
yes. Please do. Please do.
Arbor Day. Yeah.
Yes. And we'll go over them in this hour at the 9 o'clock hour next Thursday. We'll get into those. Now this homework is certainly goes to my co-hosts here and Seth and Melissa. It also goes to all of you out there.
Yeah. Ooh.
I want you guys to send us your top five holidays. It doesn't have to be a complete list of five. If it's two, if it's three, if it's one, I don't care. I'm not going to send back an email. This isn't correct. Obviously, we just want you guys to interact with us.
Exactly.
And we may even take some calls live on the air that Thursday during the segment.
That's very cool.
All right.
That'll be fun.
So next Thursday, be listening for that, everybody.
Yeah.
I want your top five holidays. Want to get into a fun one a little bit later with you guys. Never have I ever. Never have I ever. We're going to get into some of that a little bit later.
Get on the bandwagon here, everybody.
Mm-hmm. It should be fun. We'll have some fun with that one. But first, want to touch on a little bit of entertainment news and some interesting stuff here. First up, kind of a little bit of a breaking story. And it's interesting because it doesn't involve necessarily a household name, but her actions are becoming household.
Okay.
Elizabeth Finch is one of the head writers at on ABC's hit series Grey's Anatomy.
Okay.
And she's been a writer on many other shows, a very celebrated writer, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she recently took some time off and away from work because she was, healing from cancer treatments.
Oh, wow.
And everything. Okay. And she's gone on the record and talked about this a lot and these things. Well, she recently talked to Ankler Finch and said she never had any form of cancer.
Huh?
That she lied about this.
What?
She, quote, what I did was wrong, she said, not okay, some choice words, all the words. In March, the Ankler published a story with the series was looking into concerns that Finch had made up past stories about her life, including having been diagnosed with a rare form of bone cancer, as well as losing a kidney and part of her leg. She tapped a dummy catheter to her arm and shaved her hair to feign that she was undergoing chemotherapy.
Wow. Why?
Why?
Finch resigned from her position and sought inpatient treatment before an investigation by the show began. She tried to run from this, and they caught up to her.
They caught her.
She began telling lies during her 2007 writer's strike. So she's been doing this for quite some time.
Why?
She has lied to colleagues, lied to friends, family, everybody. So it is not just the public that she has done this.
No.
With.
No.
I lied, and there's no excuse for it, but there is context for it. The best way I can explain it is when you experience a level of trauma, a lot of people adopt a manipulative coping mechanism. Some people drink to hide or forget things. Drug addicts try to alter the reality. Some people cut. I lied. This was my coping and my way to feel safe and seen and heard. Now, she has not said what trauma she has experienced, and unfortunately, and not unfortunately, when you cry wolf, it makes it that much harder to believe whatever there truly is.
Exactly. So how do we, how can we believe her with this now?
Well, and it's this is the thing. Now, part of the reason I'm bringing this story up is because I have my mother in the back of my brain right now. Is my mom, I used to get into real debates with her all the time about this. My mom would tell you that she thinks one of the biggest things that holds women back in society is not only women, but crying wolf. And women that cry wolf. And and she was very specific about this. I remember asking, well, what about men? What about this? Men get away with more stuff. I'm sorry. They do. They do. And there's no other way to word that. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We just do.
Yeah.
And whereas a woman doesn't have the ability to get away with nearly as much as men do in society.
You are so, so right.
A guy does this, and it is not is nearly looked at as harshly
yes.
as it is. And look at the way you and I just reacted to this woman.
Yeah.
Seth. And I'm not picking on us,
yeah.
but I'm calling us out and,
yep.
and be owning this,
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things where I want to immediately like dump on this person. Like right. I think we all do. And, yeah, and not saying we're wrong to do that.
Initial reaction, right.
But I do think that there is a little bit to take from that part of it. The idea that it's so much, we're so much quicker to do that with somebody like this, whereas like the Jesse Williams guy who a couple of years ago
right.
lied about being
attacked, yeah.
attacked and everything. Mm-hmm. Well, that story kind of got muddied by a bunch of different of different reasons, and we yeah. never really came around to the fact of hey, this guy lied right to our faces.
Mm-hmm.
We got there a little bit, but not like we are with this story, where immediately we can't wait to dump on her. Right. And we should. I mean, two things can be true at the same time.
Right.
But at the same time, you have to acknowledge that, I think.
Yeah. Well, and you know, there's something you've talked about, especially James. You know, it's one of those things. If you never tell a lie, then you don't have to remember anything. You know, that yeah. classic line. Yeah. And right. I can't, you know, and maybe she's got just a compulsive lying problem. We know people have that as well. Mm-hmm. That sort of thing. Now, it's one of those things where we can't excuse behavior. She basically did this to everybody, friends, people who thought they were her friends, everybody. And yeah, now there's going to be consequences because of that. People won't believe her anymore. She's going to have a hard time finding a job, I'm guessing, because of this. But at the same time, you're right. We do have to take a step back. And let's like, I'm guessing there's reasons for this. Maybe they're good. Maybe they're not. Who knows? But there's probably reasons that she did it.
It does feel like one of those stories where give it time and mm-hmm. we might get some more answers to yeah. this before we jump on, you know,
exactly.
right away. And I'm not saying it's not, you know, like I don't want to or anything. I get where people are coming from about that. But
what do you think, Melissa?
It looks like, because I was just reading the article, it mm-hmm. looks like it was attention. Like
is that what it was?
She had an okay. injury. Mm-hmm. And everybody reached out to her as she recovered from that. And then after she was recovered, they stopped.
Mm.
So I think she just didn't have a lot of friends.
Mm. Oh, could be. That's
and
an interesting
so
perspective.
She started lying to get attention.
Wow.
And to have conversations with people. I mean, not that that's, you know, discredits or excuses
no.
her it's actions because
no.
it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, she said her brother died.
Yeah,
he did not die.
Well, that's so messed up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she does have to take responsibility for actions. Yeah, we're not saying she doesn't, but at the same time,
no.
it's good to understand. And I think that's a very insightful comment, Melissa, what you said, because
yeah.
it does seem like that. Maybe she just craved that attention.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. This is a little bit earth-shattering for some. As you know, DC Studios is searching for a new era with its new boss, James Gunn. One of them is, of course, director James Gunn, who has taken over in part. You know, heard Seth and I talk about this on Director's Cut.
Yeah, that's right.
So first things first, coming out of this, Wonder Woman 3 will not be moving forward and considered by the company as not going to happen.
Really?
It's unclear if the decision was made based on how Wonder Woman 1984 did, which it didn't do that great, or if it's just the studio kind of wanting to start over again. On Tuesday, Gal Gadot randomly tweeted how grateful she is to play Wonder Woman and how she can't wait to share her next chapter with everyone. Mm. So either she didn't know about the sequel being killed off, or there are other plans for the character. She was reportedly going to make $20 million for Wonder Woman 3. She is still under contract. So chances are, I'm guessing, and I read that tweet, I follow her, and what I got from that was that the character is going to show up in like a Superman Batman movie or something.
Yeah.
Like it did the first time.
They'll use her. Yeah, for sure.
I have a feeling this will change now that James Gunn's there, but for a long time, DC was afraid to let a woman lead a action film. They did not believe that she could sell, even yep. though Wonder Woman did fine. The first Wonder Woman did
right.
very good. And we've got all of these Marvel movies to show you where female leads, and mm-hmm. they did pretty darn good. Black Panther, the Wakanda Forever, I would say the first three, four names on the list are females.
They're all women, yep.
And that is the biggest selling movie of the year, if not the last. Well, it's one of the biggest movies of all time.
Yes.
Sorry, it's a $5 billion mark or whatever. Like, I mean, it's not about if it's a male or female lead. It's how are you building these characters.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
She is, I mean, they were lucky to get her as Wonder Woman. She's a thespian. She is a true bona fide actor.
Yeah.
And martial artist.
So. Yes.
And, you know, singer,
I'm wondering now,
model.
This makes me wonder, Oh, that true.
Sorry, I had to. I'm sorry, Melissa.
But
yeah, I appreciate you guys putting up with me.
Just gotta put that in there. I wonder too. I mean, this kind of. I wasn't going to be a big DC guy no matter what. So I'm going to say this from someone outside looking in. Is this going to be continuing now with James Gunn? Is he really going to be in charge?
Yeah, I wonder.
Or are the suits still going to be putting their fingers in everything?
I feel like the answers to all our questions, money.
If
they were going to come out with another one, they should have done it already. Wonder Woman 1984 came out like 3 or 4 years
ago. Yeah, however long. Well, yeah.
You just can't give audiences that big of a breath in between these movies. I'm very curious to see how this Avatar movie does. It was 20 years ago or something like Avatar came out.
Seems like it.
I don't know. I being completely honest, I'm not a James Cameron guy. Right. I never saw the first Avatar. Mm-hmm. It's not my thing. But I know it was one of the biggest selling movies of all time 20 years ago. I don't know if that audience is still going to be. Now, James Cameron's, I'll give him credit on this. He's been very honest about this. He said that he's got like 5 or 6 of these written. Mm-hmm. But how this second one does is how we'll know if we're going to see the others or not.
Yes.
If it doesn't do well, he's scrapping them. He doesn't care.
Yep.
Which kind of makes me wonder, where he is as an artist, like as a creative. Mm-hmm. Like, I wonder about that part of it, but that's another conversation.
We'll save that for director's cut. Yeah.
Well, to be fair, I'm a huge Mel Brooks fan. And Mel Brooks used to be very guilty of this. He would come out with Spaceballs like 10, 20 years after Star Wars.
It
came out with the Robin Hood movie like 10 years after and stuff. And a lot of people gave him a hard time for that. Mm-hmm. Those movies did pretty well.
Yeah,
because
it was Mel Brooks, basically. Yeah.
Would they have done better if they had come out sooner?
Probably.
Yeah, you got to wonder. Yeah.
Yep.
And we got two more things I want to touch on. One of them, Time Magazine named its Person of the Year. And this one was pretty much a no-brainer. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
Hmm. Okay.
Quote, Zelensky's success as a wartime leader has relied on the fact that courage is contagious. It spread through Ukraine's political leadership in the first days of the invasion, as everyone realized the president had stuck around. Usually when these things kind of happen, what do we see? We see dictators run. We
fly
see
to Europe,
presidents
yeah.
run. We see all this.
Another country. Yeah.
This man put fatigues on.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's what that president did.
Yeah.
Instead of running for their lives, many Ukrainians grabbed whatever weapons they could find and ran to defend their towns and cities against an invading forced army with tanks and attack helicopters.
Yeah.
David Letterman traveled to Ukraine in October to interview Zelensky for his Netflix show, My Next Guest Needs No Introduction. The episode drops next Monday.
Ah, okay. All right.
Yeah, definitely. I saw a clip of that.
I'm so happy that David is still doing interviews. Still one of the greatest interviewers of all time.
Yes, he is.
I'm still learning from him. I watch those in part just to learn from him.
I like this format for him better because he doesn't have to be the clown anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
He can actually be serious about what he's doing, and I like that. I really enjoy it.
I know Seth has to get going. You got a prior engagement.
I have a first band concert
to
get to here, so I'm very excited. But that means I'm going to have to leave all of you. I know. Don't beg me to stay.
No,
sad, Seth. This is me.
Heartbroken, Melissa.
Sad.
Tell little man to break a leg, please.
Yes, indeed.
Have
we will.
Have a good time, brother.
Thank you.
A good time. We're actually going to talk about your family here now because we're going to talk about Miracle on 34th Street.
Okay,
so that's
good.
What we're
going to
do
all
while
right.
you leave.
But, I'll be here in spirit.
Yeah. Have a great
right.
time, Seth.
Have a great
we'll
day, everybody.
You too, Seth.
Bye.
So I wanted to mention, of course, Miracle on 34th Street. That is premiering December 9th, 10th, 15th, and 16th, and 17th are going to have shows. The 17th will have a 2 o'clock show to go along with the 7 o'clock matinees. Melissa, we've gotten to talk about this a little bit. It's directed by Susan Engren, one of our favorite directors. This cast is amazing. We got some of our favorite people in this cast, along with some new people.
Yeah.
Some people we haven't seen in a while.
It's fun to see new people on stage.
Yeah. And I like that, while this is a story, I don't think we have to explain to the audience. Most everybody knows Miracle on 34th Street by now. Even if you do or you don't, you can go to this show. You can take it in. I mean, if you've watched this movie every Christmas your whole life, I would still encourage you to take in this play. It's going to be very different.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's going to be a different interpretation of it because it's done by a group of people that you haven't seen do it before. Mm-hmm. And they have never performed it before. So It will be enjoyable to watch no matter what.
Cannot wait for you to be able to have a chance to take in this show. Get your tickets at wrctheater.org. Get ready. You don't have to stand in line. I was going to say, like, get ready. Like, it's a day away. Like, you should be waiting. I love that. That'd be hilarious. Tim walks out of his office.
Got my running shoes laced up.
Hey, James, what did you tell your listeners? Because I got like a line of people out here. You can get them tomorrow or today if you want to order them. Go to wrctheater.org. Whatever you got to do today, tomorrow, get your tickets. Let's give them a great opening night. Let's fill the house.
It's going to be a wonderful show to get you into the spirit of the season.
Well said. We'll take a break. We'll come back with some That Ain't Right stories, good stories of the day. It's Mel and James taking you through your morning on WFHR. Welcome back to the morning show here on WFHR, locally grown radio. Melissa and James here with you. Hope you're having a great start to your Thursday out there. Thanks for hanging out with us, everybody.
Yeah, it's Thursday already.
It is time. No, I needed a reminder. I have to keep on looking at the calendar because is it really Thursday?
Is your clock right now?
No, not yet. No. Darn clock. I know everything on this board, but how to fix the clock. I feel like it's one of those old VCRs that like your dad would struggle with and like scream at and yell curse words you never heard before at. Like,
yep. It's okay. It'll be right next year.
You're right, yes. Speaking of That Ain't Right stories, we dive into one right here. And I don't know if this guy was like trying to be a jerk. He's just a dumb jerk or he's just a careless one. But he is definitely like 86th from any lemonade stand for the rest of all of time.
Oh, no.
Police in Everett, Washington are looking for a guy who strolled up to a kid's lemonade and snack stand a few weeks ago, picked out about $15 worth of items, then paid the kid with a counterfeit $100 bill.
Aww.
So the guy made off with the $85 he got as change, and as far as we know, he was still out there potentially ripping off other kids. Now, there is a...
That's mean.
Incredibly mean, like one of the lowest things I've ever heard of, to be honest with you. And I come from this territory. So I want to mention this story came to us in August and I've been sitting on it for a while for two reasons. One of them I'll tell you right now. There is a silver lining. The kid who runs the stand is an 11-year-old named Jeremy, and he's using his lemonade stand to raise money for a vending machine to grow his business and also sends money to Ukraine where he's from.
Oh, wow.
Jeremy says he thought $100 was fishy because the texture didn't feel good. It just felt wrong. Now, this is a kid, and he could tell. He could tell something was wrong there. I think that is incredibly insightful from that young man. It's one thing for me, too, at that age, but that's where I come from. I was used to that stuff. This kid, I can't imagine how many counterfeit bills he's come across. He took it to a nearby gas station, and they confirmed that it was counterfeit. Fortunately, there is some grainy surveillance footage of the guy, so police have an idea who they're looking for. Two follow-ups to this story. There is a GoFundMe page that had been set up for Jeremy and has already made his money back. In fact, they have raised over $11,000.
Whoa.
Yeah. And again, this was a while back, so he's already raised almost double that by now. And this grainy footage was enough footage for them to be able to catch this guy. If the two reports that I'm seeing from two different articles, they have caught this person.
Good.
I didn't want to do the story until they caught the guy. I got to be honest. I did not. I mentioned this the other day. I've never been good at watching like unsolved mysteries. That show used to drive me crazy when I was a kid.
Because he gets to the end of it and you're like, I'm so invested now, but what happened?
Who's the killer? Like, yes, who's the killer? Who did it? You know, you never find out or whatever.
Next week on Unsolved Mysteries.
Yeah.
What?
Come on,
no,
Robert Stack.
I can't stop there.
Come on, Robert Stack. Tell me. You have the answers, Robert. Tell me, Mr. I really like that this story had a good ending a silver lining, and that this kid, he wasn't left with this moment in as a child, like, this guy did this to me, and that's the end of the story. That's just the beginning. The end of the story is, this one guy was a knucklehead, but hundreds and hundreds of other strangers, people came
up.
Yeah. So it's actually a good story of the day with a That Ain't Right story put inside.
Way to sandwich that in there, James. Nicely done.
Yeah. One more here for you. And this is, again, I mean, you thought that was low, that last person. This one, just as low, if not lower. Whoever did this obviously has not found the Christmas spirit yet. A 39-year-old guy near Cleveland called the cops last Friday after someone stole the baby Jesus from a nativity scene in his front yard. They also took three cows, a donkey, a lamb figurines that were part of the set. And it may have been a prank because they left something behind as well. He told the cops he found a Halloween tombstone decoration and some other Halloween decorations instead. It's not clear if this was a prank or if it was something more mischievous than that. If it is a prank, you did it wrong. Like, you didn't, like, right. You really got to, like...
Stealing something isn't a prank.
Yeah.
That's a crime.
Like, say you moved the nativity scene to, like, the back of the house. And you put the Halloween decorations out front. Nobody lost anything. They just got the inconvenience of moving it back, you know,
right.
Which is still kind of, you know, a little dicey, a little thin ice, but it's not as bad of a prank as stealing the items. That's a theft. That's where all of a sudden the police get involved in everything. Understand what pranking is, people. I'm not going to pick on any one generation for this one or anything, but I do feel like we have to like reiterate what the definition of a prank is.
Yeah, they think there's some misconceptions on that now with the rise of social media and what is happening on some of these platforms that people think are funny. They're not really that funny.
No. And they're not even that creative or anything either.
Oh, no. Not if everybody's doing it. Like, oh, I saw this cool prank. Let's do it again. No.
Do you think it's fair to say a prank should never hurt anybody?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I feel like it should be. Like, that should be, like, one of the, like, number one.
Physically or financially.
Right. If you're doing something and there is a chance it is going to hurt somebody, I think right there you have your answer. Like, oh, I shouldn't be doing this.
Exactly.
We will take a break. We'll get to Melissa's news. We got one more of That Ain't Right story, some good stories of the day, and some other fun stuff to get to coming up right here on Mornings at WFHR, locally grown radio. Welcome back, everybody. Mornings on WFHR. Hopefully you're having a good holiday season already out there. Thank you for getting in the Christmas spirit with us. Melissa and James here with you. Taking you to the top of the hour with our show, the morning show. And we got some good stories of the day to wrap up the show, but we got to get to the That Ain't Right first.
Well, of course.
And this is a bit of another one of those That Ain't Right stories with a good story of the day maybe mixed in. You guys can decide at home. If you are not a fan of cheaters and like vigilante justice, you are going to love this lady. A no-nonsense Uber driver in Dallas posted a TikTok after she realized a passenger was cheating on his wife and decided to expose him for it.
Whoa.
Her first name is Ronnie, and late last week she picked up a guy up at his house and watched his wife and kids see him off. Then once he was in the car, he asked her to make an extra stop. It turned out he was picking up his mistress to take her on a trip, and the two of them kept bad-mouthing the wife in the back of the car.
Oh, boy.
So without telling them, Ronnie changed her route, backtracked 5 miles, went back to the guy's house, and dropped them off in his front yard. She kicked him and the mistress out and left them there with all their luggage.
Oh, boy.
She drove off after that, so she doesn't know for sure if he got caught, but she warned other cheaters she'll do the same exact thing to every one of them.
You know what? I can't fault her for that.
Oh, God, no. No, I am a huge fan of this lady right now. I have no idea who she is, but Ronnie, you got big fans right here at the morning show. I can't think of, but I mean, there is a level of arrogance that exists in this story that is, I mean, it has to be called out. I don't even know, even if for some reason you agreed with this guy or whatever, or you're a big person and giving benefit of the doubt, even you got to admit, this guy's a jerk. This guy just deserves this.
Well, and his complete disregard for the person driving the cab he was in, the Uber driver. Like, he's just going to air all his dirty laundry in front of her and think, you know, it doesn't matter what she thinks, except that she's driving you, dude.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, now, I would say that most I've been in a lot of cabs in my life. I've never been in an Uber. I've never had somebody drive me in an Uber before, but I've been in a lot of cabs in my life. And I think people wonder sometimes what the difference is. And a cabbie, not to say that an Uber driver doesn't feel this way the same way, but a cabbie, well, this is a profession. This is a job. Hmm. And part of that profession is oftentimes ignoring what is ever going on in the back seat. Like, every cab driver has had this experience, has been through this, where, you know, somebody back there isn't feeling good, or they're in a fight, or something like that. And, you know, you've got that plexiglass that is, you know, you're acting like it's a soundproof room or something, even though you can kind of hear them a little bit. the huge difference here, Uber drivers, while this is a profession and I think it should be taken as seriously as one, it is not the same, like, moral code, if you will. It's not the same kind of thing. These are just people. Look, usually
they're gig workers. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Gig economy. Just looking to make a couple of bucks to make ends meet. And when that's on the line, there's a big difference of, okay, I got to do this and I got to keep my mouth shut because my fare might stop and they tell my boss and I don't get another job.
With right, Uber, cabbies work for a company, where Uber drivers work kind of for themselves.
Yeah, you got the rating system to worry about and everything, but I gather that, like, a situation like this, I can make up that rating system. I can't make this up. My moral compass is going to be skewed if I just take this guy to the airport.
Yeah, because what do you then do with that? It's like, it's icky. It puts you in an icky situation of just dealing with someone who has no moral compass.
Yeah. And I mean, again, the stupidity and the arrogance of thinking you can get away with this and treating, like, I mean, it is some low stuff. Do you think she would have done this had she not seen the wife and kids saying goodbye to him?
It's hard to say because then she wouldn't have known.
I meant it more rhetorically. I'm sorry. Right. I wasn't trying to, like, actually ask you, tell me, Melissa, what do you do? No, I'm sorry. I meant it more rhetorically. But yeah. I do. You got to wonder. I would hope that, I would think that she would. If she's this, like, diligent about her feelings about this, I have a feeling she was going to say something no matter what. But would she have known if he was married? Is he wearing a wedding ring? Knowing this guy, he's probably wearing the wedding ring while he's picking up the mistress.
Who knows? And it's not like, I don't feel like she would have been, you know, looking for that.
Yeah.
If they weren't being so blatant and talking about it and bad-mouthing the wife. I don't know. It's gross.
It's really gross. It's really tacky. It's also hilarious the way she handled this.
Mm-hmm.
I want
just
everybody
dropping them off in the front yard.
Again, this isn't a cabbie. It's an Uber driver. So I want you to imagine as she's makes this decision and, like, oh, no, I'm taking these two back. And so these two are back there bad-mouthing the wife and all this. And at some point, maybe they don't. Hey, wait a minute. Are we turning around? This isn't the way to the airport. And then she just, because she calmly did all these things she said in her TikTok. She didn't, like, rush this or anything. She pulls up to the house again. They got to be wondering what's going on. And then she gets out and just
unloads their luggage.
Unloads
their luggage out of the trunk. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I just can't imagine, man. I can't imagine the looks on their faces and the dumbfoundedness. And I would have gone one step further if I was her, because this is the level that I take things. Usually a little, like, if not too far, right under the cusp. I'd have put the luggage right on the front, right next to the front door, and rang the doorbell. I would have to. I'm not going to stick around to see the fireworks or anything.
Yeah.
But I gotta like try to make darn
push
sure.
The envelope
I just gotta push it a little bit more.
I mean, it would be devastating, obviously, for the woman, and then there's kids involved too. So that's no laughing matter because that would be awful. And then how? Yeah, I don't know. The fallout from that was probably really terrible. But also, sounds like a terrible human being.
Right. You know, and I mean, I do feel for the children in this. Unfortunately, you know, this is where we learn a lot of those life lessons, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's That is an interesting one, that's for sure. We will take a quick commercial break. We'll come back with some an interesting one about an Olive Garden manager and some other good stories of the day. Plenty more coming up for you right here on Mornings at WFHR, where we are locally grown radio. Welcome back, everybody, to Mornings on WFHR. Melissa and James here with you at 9:45 on the clock. And boy, do I got a doozy for you. Some people do take advantage of sick days, but this manager gone a little too far. An Olive Garden manager at Olive or Overpark in Kansas sent a long email to employees threatening to fire anyone who called in sick more than once this month. But instead, she got canned by the corporation. The full message she sent out is long, but here are the highlights. She started by saying, quote, call-offs are occurring at a staggering rate. From now on, if you call off, you might as well go out and look for another job. We are no longer tolerating any excuse for calling off. By the next line, it was what really got her in trouble. Quote, if you are sick, you need to come prove it to us. If your dog died, you need to bring him in and prove it to us.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this lady should have never been in a management position. She added that if it's a family emergency, you can't just say to, you can't and you can't say too bad, go work somewhere else. She said if anyone calls out more than once in the next 30 days, they will not have a job. Then she bragged about how she's never called in sick in 11 years, even when she was sick. Which, I mean, working in the food industry, I have a follow-up to that. Some people online are taking her side and think people do lie about sick days a lot. But Olive Garden put out a statement and said they've already fired her for it. Quote, we strive to provide a caring and respectful work environment for our team members. This message is not aligned with our company values. We can confirm we have parted ways with this manager. And by the way, she did call in sick a couple of times in her 11-year illustrious career at Olive Garden.
I love that they pointed that out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a... I do think that we do have to work this. Employees are getting more and more power than they've ever had. And that is, I think, a very good thing. That's my opinion. I think that's a positive. I think the power has finally, it's not as if companies don't still have all the power, if not the majority of the power. I mean, let's be frank about this. They're the ones signing the checks. You know, I mean,
this isn't at will state. So,
right.
They can fire you for no reason.
But I do think that it's very encouraging and hopeful to see that the power has been a little bit more evened out a little bit. And that employees are getting more power. But with power comes what? Responsibility. I wasn't sure if you know that line or not, Melissa. I'm sorry. I should have just let you said it. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
But it's true. And so with that, you don't get the you don't get to be the person, I'm going to be lazy. I know that they need me. I know that they can't replace me. So I'm just going to go ahead and take advantage of that. That's not what a job is about.
No.
That's not. It's supposed to be a mutually beneficial thing that you're both giving and taking. I give my, my time out of my life to this job. They pay me for it. It's give and take. This is the agreement we've all gone to. If an employer or an employee doesn't hold their end of the bargain, I don't care. It does. It ceases to exist. Now, there are reasons for that. If your dog died, if you are sick, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're, if you're just a lazy employee, no, I'm sorry. I mean, you don't get to keep a job. A job is not a birthright. It's a privilege.
No, but it's also at the manager to create a positive work culture, a positive work environment for their employees. A letter like that is going to do the exact opposite.
Come to work or you're fired.
Oh, yeah, I want to go there. Yeah, I mean, I've never worked at an Olive Garden, and they get a bad rap quite often.
True, true.
I love eating at Olive Garden. It's actually one of my favorite restaurants. I don't care if it's a chain. I like it. Yeah. I know it's not true Italian, James, and you.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
But, but that being said, I don't think a job at Olive Garden can't be easily replaced with another job somewhere in a similar field, in a similar,
Yeah. Every time chances are there are other restaurants near that restaurant.
It's an Olive Garden, it's in a bigger town.
Right.
It's not in a town of 2,000 people. So there's going to be other chain restaurants you could go work at. So that step by that manager is doing the exact opposite of what she needs to do to build a that person needs to do to build a positive culture at their work environment.
I'm not making light of how difficult it is on the fast food industry right now, or the restaurant industry right now. It's hard to find people, and it's really hard to find good people. You're not helping anything with this, with your frustration with this.
Creating toxic feelings for everybody.
That's just going to give another restaurant another good worker. You know, that's all you're doing is losing good people. It sounds like the people at that you know made this decision at Olive Garden way up top realize that.
Yes, no, good on them for saying, "Hey, yeah, this isn't okay. We fired her."
Yeah. All right. After all those, we just did like three back-to-back That Ain't Right stories. Anybody else need a palate cleanser? I need a palate cleanser.
Yes,
yeah, we got to wrap up on some good stuff here. Let's do that. Let's wrap up on some good stories of the day. This one, I saw this morning. Melissa thought of you right away. I think that this one's going to hit you right in the heart. The Acoustical Society of America is 3D printing violins to make the instruments more affordable for hundreds more children and adults who want to learn to play. They are specifically doing this for kids in schools, rural schools, and inner city schools.
Awesome.
Learning how to play music with a poorly built instrument can lead to poor technique, but quality violins are thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
The Society's AVIVA Young Artist Program is using a specially engineered plastic polymer substance that replicates the tonal qualities of a traditional built violin.
Wow.
The neck and fingerboard are also printed in plastic to ensure a comfortable grip for musicians. Quote, "There's nothing quite like the sound of a well-made violin," said Program Director Mary Elizabeth Brown. "Building such a quality string instrument takes time, perfect materials, and a lot of skill, and the best ones can cost millions of dollars."
Yes.
AVA has helped kids of all ages pursue music, particularly with violins, and has described the sound as darker and more mellow than a normal violin.
Which would probably not be bad for someone learning.
Mm-hmm. Even mediocre violins can cost thousands, which puts them out of reach for most beginners of the music classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
"Our goals were to explore the new sound world created by using new materials, to leverage the new technology being used in other disciplines, and to make music education sustainable and accessible throughout the printing of more durable instruments."
Yeah, that's perfect.
Violins aren't the first instruments to be 3D printed. Interesting engineer details that guitars and saxophones have also been made.
You know, this is actually a really good use of plastic, because this isn't something that's just going to get used once and thrown away. That violin is going to have it's probably going to go through multiple, you know, strings and bows and teach lots of children how to play violin.
That's so cool. It's one of those stories that just hits you in the heart. I do have to time out from that good feeling for a second. Come on. We were playing recorders. We could have been playing violins. I would have loved to play the violin. I've never picked up a recorder since sixth grade, fifth grade probably. But I'd be playing a violin to this day. That ain't fair. I want to go back in time. This isn't fair.
Okay. Back in time, but have today's technology.
Yes. Something like that.
Right. But, man, for $34.
That's crazy.
That's what the cost they're talking about, that these are costing in materials to print them. That's cool. And they can make them the size of the kid.
Oh, man. They can make them right or left. There's so much versatility with this. I love thinking about like the big picture of this. I think the immediate result is worthwhile and a great story in its own right. You can just stop right there and. But think about, they do this for a couple of years. They do this for 5-10 years. And how many more musicians, how many more creative people are we going to have? I'm not saying everybody's going to go on and work in the Boston Symphony or something like that. But,
Have the option.
Yes. To have the creative outlet to just be able to have an instrument to play. Not everybody that picks up guitar wants to be the next, great guitar.
Emmanuel.
Yeah. Some people just want to play guitar, but they don't have the money or don't have the accessibility to it.
Mm-hmm.
This changes the game.
It does. It absolutely does.
So cool. That's so cool.
Especially for school programs, because schools already don't have funding for arts, and this will make it more attainable.
See, this is why I love, part of why I love working with you, Melissa, and part of why I think of you with these stories. That's something that I would have thought about maybe if I'm lucky later tonight at like 2 in the morning. I'm glad you brought that up. I think that's a really important point that we don't touch on nearly enough. It seems like every election, we're taking more and more money out of our education system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Get some good stories of the day. A police officer in Georgia saved a young deer that got wedged between two bars and a metal fence, and his chest cam caught it all on video. This is a really cool video. There was another one. It's not part of this collection of stories here, but I just want to encourage people to Google it. Boy, where did that happen? I'm sorry. I shouldn't have audibled here. I saw it this morning. There's body cam footage of a police officer who rushed into a pond to save a drowning infant, but she can't swim.
Oh my.
And she didn't think about that until after she had already saved the child. And there's body cam footage of it.
Wow.
I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. I watched it this morning, and I just incredible hero move right there.
That's awesome.
No cape, no backstory or anything like that. Just a badge and brave, and just, you know, doing what needed to be done.
Good for us, a chest cam so we could see the whole thing.
Right. Yeah. Meanwhile, cops and firefighters in Nevada worked together to save a wild donkey that wandered into a mine shaft and got stuck in a 10-foot hole. A hiker spotted it and called it last Thursday. Rescuers had to scale a mountain with all their gear to get it to it, and then they spent hours hoisting it out and released it. It was hungry and dehydrated, but wasn't hurt.
Oh, wow.
And that donkey's got quite the story to tell.
No kidding.
No other donkey's ever going to believe him, though. They're never going to believe him.
No.
I'm going to have to add the YouTube video. Going to have to pull it up, show the other donkeys. Like, look, this really happened to me. The city of Kingston, Ontario, in Canada, just finished up its annual Toys for Tickets campaign. Anyone who got a parking ticket between November 1st and December 3rd could avoid paying by donating a toy instead.
Hey, that's a good idea.
Love that idea. Since 2005, they have collected more than 3,600 toys to hand out to kids over the holidays. And a lot of cities here are doing it this year too. Everywhere from Las Vegas to Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
Nice.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's a different, you know, take on, because where does that money go? It goes back into, obviously, you know, the system. Well, these toys then are donated back into the community, which, you know, has a different impact.
I don't, I will say I don't know. Every city handles their fines and stuff differently. I know some cities really depend on that money. It's the only income they have sometimes. So I don't want to, you know, say that everybody should do this. But I do think that the majority of cities could probably do this, especially if it's just for a couple of days.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a couple of days. How many, you know, how much harm could it really cause to your overall city budget, you know, let alone the PR that you get from the goodwill that you're doing.
Yeah.
And Kellogg's just announced they have donated 30 million servings of food to food banks across the U.S. Things like cereal, snack bars, Eggo waffles.
Wow.
Good on them. Way to go, Kellogg's.
Kellogg's. Nice.
And this isn't the first time they've done. In fact, I want to, if I got this right, I think almost every year around this time we do this story. We talk about this, that Kellogg's does this kind of thing. I'm pretty sure, at least. I feel like that.
That's good. And then U.S. Cellular just did that to our Wisconsin Rapids Food Bank. They donated $5,000 worth of food to Focus Food Pantry.
Didn't you have that in your stories, Mel?
Yeah.
I thought so. Yeah,
we did that yesterday. Yeah. That was pretty awesome.
It's so cool. So cool. And a big shout out to that and this community, really.
It's great when big companies like that invest in our small communities.
It sets a tone. Mm-hmm. You know, it sets a tone that, not to say that other citizens wouldn't, you know, jump at helping or donating or anything. But when we see corporations do this, it just sets a different tone. And like, okay, here's the bar. Meet us here.
Yeah.
You know,
we are all in this together.
Right on. Melissa, fantastic show. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. It's been a really fun week.
Great.
Great work with the news. And I don't know if anybody else caught it, but Melissa did a really nice job with that Miracle on 34th Street commercial. Nice work, Mel.
You're welcome, James.
Appreciate you. You have yourself a great one and have a good weekend.
Thanks. You too.
We'll be back next week with more. We'll have more morning show for you tomorrow, kicking off at 7. Be sure to join us then for that. Stick around for Morning Magazine right here at WFHR, locally grown radio.